Shavua Tov, everyone. Shavua Tov. As you could see from our last class together on Wednesday, I definitely had one thing going for me. I was a shtickler prophet. I say a shtickler because the Gemara says the prophecy was given to people that I don't want to be part of after the Churban Beis Hamikdash. However, I was a shtickler prophet when I said on Wednesday that as we begin these shiurim, it's going to cause a lot of controversy and it's going to cause a lot of feelings that I believe are within all of you, like they're within me, regarding our community. So as we get into this second segment of my community, I don't want you to hold back. I feel that that's part and parcel of what we're supposed to do. Doesn't make a difference. If you recall on Wednesday, you remember what happened. We, instead of having a shiur for 15, 20 minutes, we had a shiur for 45 minutes, and it wasn't because I spoke the whole time. As I said, that's the beginning of the Kollel, if you recall Rabbi Singer, I believe that's the way you learn Torah. That's why Gemara has always been the highest climax of learning Torah, because Gemara is based on debate, live debate in the Beis Medrash. It's a dynamic process, and I'm hoping that's going to continue, God willing. Now, having said that, I hope that not everything I'm ever going to say is going to cause you controversy. That's not the goal of these classes. These classes are to talk genuinely about our community, what's good, what's bad, what needs to be fixed, what doesn't need to be fixed, what we can be proud of, and whatnot. Well, what happened, Rabbi? What I'd like to say today is not so much self-gratification, but rather a little bit of criticism against our community based on what we said on Wednesday. If you recall on Wednesday, we said that at least the Jewish people have accepted the view of the Rambam against the Sefer HaYikarim, that the Torah will never change. It's eternal. And what we do is apply it to the new reality now. If that's correct, then we can't forget the first clause of what we said on Wednesday. The first clause was that the Torah is an Eitz Chaim, it's a Torah of life, it's eternal, and it's supposed to apply to our lives here in the postmodern era of 2011. If not, if the Torah has nothing to do with our real life, it's restricted to the shul, or perhaps even restricted to the home, but when you do business, when you speak to people, when you ultimately debate about politics or whatnot, the Torah has nothing to do with that, and it's detached from reality, then at that moment, it ceases to be an Eitz Chaim, it ceases to be an eternal, living tree of life, because it has nothing to do with life. And exactly on that point, I'd like to comment this morning. Bruce.
Why does it have to be like a wine? Why can't it be a diamond?
Pardon, I'm sorry.
You know, that it either speaks completely 100% or zero. Obviously, it was written first and fully wrote.
No.
Right? And
no.
Perhaps some of it.
I can't agree with what you said. I can't agree with the words you said. You're saying that the Torah was written for that generation.
Well,
that's incorrect.
That generation.
The Torah is eternal. I believe the Torah is eternal. And if the Torah says, and I'll give you the biggest controversial topic, that there's slavery in the world, there's a Jewish slave, there's a non-Jewish slave, there's halachos that relate to the Jewish and the non-Jewish slave. That's an eternal message. The fact that today the word slavery is not politically correct does not make the Torah irrelevant. We have to try to ask ourselves, well, if we're living in 2011, and the word slavery is a derogatory term, so how do we come to grips with that? How do we deal with it? Is there an interpretation on slavery that will allow us to bring it into life or not? Because the minute we say, like you just did, in my opinion, the way I heard it, it's all good for that generation. Then why can't you say that about Shabbos and Kashrus and Tarat HaMishpacha for that generation?
I think something is not more clearly applicable then. Do we have to reinterpret for ourselves today?
And now I think, Bruce, you said it much better, and you're absolutely in the dotted line. I'll repeat what you said. There were many things in the Torah that were far more applicable then, easily, in a natural way, than it is today. You're right. It's more difficult today? Absolutely. Now, allow me to bring up something that, in my opinion, has been sitting on my heart for years, and I find it very problematic. We like to pride ourselves with applying the eternal ancient Torah to the modern world, or the postmodern world, and we live in both worlds. We open our shul and our windows to the world, we see what's out there, we try to apply the Torah. That's beautiful. I didn't say Aish. Ancient Torah. It's ancient, but it's still applicable today. No, it's an ancient Torah that's applicable in the year 2011. However, the fact that we're open to the big world means that we have to live in two worlds. We have to put our feet very firmly in the Torah, and our feet very firmly in the world out there, the postmodern world, and we have to the other, and do it successfully, Be'ezrat Hashem, and it's not easy. What bothers me sometimes is that I feel that as we pride ourselves in being these slash Jews, why do I call ourselves slash Jews? Because we're modern slash Orthodox. We're Zionist slash religious, right? We're Torah slash Avodah. We're Torah slash Derech Eretz. We're slash Jews, we live in both worlds, and I pride myself with living in both worlds. Rav Soloveitchik once said, people claim I have two heads. I know philosophy very well on the one hand, and I'm an absolute Litvish Gadol on the other. He said, better have two heads than no head at all. And I sign in the dotted line, of course, Mi'ani HaKatan. What bothers me sometimes is that our priorities are messed up. And what do I mean our priorities are messed up? Allow me to share with you a very simple, simple survey that was done as a study for sociology here in Israel. It's no secret that every religious community, Hasidic, Litvak, religious Zionist, light, heavy, whatever you want to call it, has a certain percentage that do not continue. Continue the sentence, please. Do not continue in the footsteps of their parents. Right? That's why there's books out there called Off the Derech, A Little Off the Derech and whatnot. This is part of reality. And I said on Wednesday, and I'm telling you again, that if there was a community out there that had 100% success, I'd sign on. And I don't care if I have to change my clothes for it. But there isn't. There isn't. Now, there was a survey done, and I heard this from Dr. Moshe Hellinger, of Bar-Ilan University, a sociologist, on those that were in the settlements throughout Yudan Shomron, that went off the derech, ultimately, around the years of the Second Intifada, there were many reasons for it and whatnot. And they checked many things, but one thing I want to share with you. Them remain rightists, and how many of them became leftists? Now, I remind you, they're coming from the settlements, so I'm assuming that their parents are not leftists, at least on the Israeli map. Safe assumption? Okay. So they're growing up as rightists and as religious Jews. They're going off the derech, they're no longer religious. Unfortunately, they're mechallel Shabbos, perhaps they don't keep kosher, some of them are very anti-religious for that matter. This survey shows that despite that all, they remained rightists. They remain rightist politically. Anyone want to explain it? No, it's not easily explainable, and allow me to sharpen the question. If they want to throw away where they came from, namely, parents kept kashrus, I don't keep kashrus. Parents kept Shabbos, I don't keep Shabbos. I eat on Yom Kippur. I throw it all away. I don't like it. Somehow, it bothers me, and I'm not going into the reasons why, who, what, and how. How come you remain rightist?
Right when you see your present reality, the truth on earth. And religion is an issue of emuna, by and large. Either you have it or you don't. So you can be perfectly right-wing because that's how you see the facts on the ground.
Ruth?
When it comes to kashrut and other chukim, you might say, essentially my parents, they chose to be religious because they're about children. And I like the alternative lifestyle. I choose not to. My worldview in terms of politics remains the same, more or less, perhaps.
You heard a point of view from Bruce? It makes sense and it's logical. Bruce, the only difference between what I'm about to present and what you just said is you have much more faith in the Jewish people than me. You really respect them more. And maybe in Chodesh Elul, I should just go with what you said and we'll say Kaddish to Rabbanan. But I'll tell you what I think. There's a saying in Hebrew, I think it comes from Chazal, I may be wrong. Hahamonim chamorim. You ever heard that saying?
No.
Okay. Allow me to explain it in English. When a simple Jew in Israel votes for a political party, do you really believe that the night before he went through agonies of conscience to go ahead and to decide which party do I give my vote for? Where am I politically?
This or that?
You know, I don't believe that those religious Jews that became non-religious from the settlement actually made an informative decision to remain rightist because that's the way they see the political map. I personally, as opposed to what you presented, which is, as I said, logical, I believe that they remain rightist because that's the way they always were. And as the saying goes, Emli Koach, I've always voted rightist, I'll vote rightist. Not because the political map taught them that. What? Oh, so this study wanted to understand, how come you remain rightist like you always were? Imagine, you have a tradition of rightist. When you lived in the settlements, you vote rightist. Then you became non-religious, and you remain rightist. But everything else changed. You used to keep Shabbos? No. You used to keep Kashrus? No. Right? You used to be in a religious school? You don't send your kids to a religious school. How come these kids remained? Suggests Dr. Moshe Herlinger, and there's a lot of logic to what he says, and again, Bruce said, well, that's the way they see the political map. I'm going to suggest something else. They didn't like where they grew up. They had problems. They threw it all away. But they didn't want to hurt their parents. They didn't want to hurt their parents. They had problems with religion. They didn't have problems with their parents per se. Some of them did, but in general they didn't. What was important to their parents, says this study? According to these kids, the most common topic that came up at the Shabbos table was what? Torah, mitzvot, Shabbos, kashrus, taharat ha-mishpacha, davening, investing in your avodah Hashem. What was the most common topic on the table? Land of Israel. Continue?
Zionism.
Not Zionism.
Security.
Politics. Politics. What does a simple Jew speak about between the children and the kugel? They speak about avodah Hashem, parsha, they speak about all these things. In general, if you take a Shabbos table in our communities, the majority of the talk that happens around the table is politics. It's politics. So therefore, these kids said to the people doing the survey, to doing the study, well, listen, with all due respect, we didn't want to hurt our parents, so we saw what was the priority of my parents. They went to demonstrations against anyone that thought of bringing land for peace. They went ahead and they spoke about it with passion. They called anyone that wanted to give land for peace a traitor. They went crazy on these issues. The second intifada, they kept on saying, why is it that they're not going in and fighting, and how dare they even suggest to make a settlement with them and whatnot? They never saw that same passion by their parents on issues that have to do with Shabbos, Kashrus, and all the rest of the stuff. You don't see this at Shabbos tables around our community?
None of those people, their only passion is politics, none of them are from.
They were absolutely from. No. They were absolutely. Alex, it is absolutely from. We're talking about from Jews. They made Kiddush. They sang Zmiros. They may have even said. But what did they have a passion for in that home that they grew up in? According to these kids, the passion was not dual. That's my point. It was not dual. They did it both, but their heart, their mind, their talk, the majority of what they spoke about was politics. They asked him, how come you remained rightist and you threw everything else away? And the answer they gave was, we didn't want to hurt our parents that much.
But they didn't care about not hurting their parents for their religion.
They definitely didn't care that much about hurting their parents. They had problems with religion and they threw it away. I'm not getting into that this morning as to why. But when they asked them one pinpointed question, how come you remained rightist? It wasn't because of what Bruce said, namely, well, that's the way we see the political map. The majority said, because that's what's important to our parents.
Well, it seems that their rebellion was against Hashem, not against politics.
Again, you're saying like Bruce, but this study proved otherwise, at least, and that's what it suggested. Now, proved it or not, I don't know. I'll take your question. Yes. Well, one second, let's just hear another question.
I mean, I think both of they grew up here. They were never religious. Even they were doing it just because to satisfy their parents.
Could very well be.
But I have known another phenomenon. They're religious. And they have the religion. Not to say, you know, that I know thousands of people, you know, they were Hasidim, isn't it? Not only they were not religious, they were anti-religious. It's sort of a protest. You know, I'm talking about the people that I met in the, you know, the show of this is the Polish Jews. I would say, in my estimate, that 90%.
Yeah.
Not religious. They were very religious before. They would have seen them.
Exactly.
This I know a few of them. I mean, personally, it was very unprecedented. It's a different phenomenon.
You're right. I'm talking about religion. It could very well be. Again, you're explaining. You are explaining why they're not religious today. I was trying to explain something else, and that is, why did they remain writers? And according to this study, the reason was that's the passion of the parents were. Now, again, I want to say something here. Forget about the study for a moment, or remember the study. The study could be correct or incorrect, and I see that you're bothered by it, which is great. What I'd like to do is to do exactly that, and to make you bothered by it. Let's assume for a moment, just for a moment, that that study is true. I personally, in the community that I'm proud to be part of, have seen, time and again, that phenomenon happening. Now, whether or not it's going to produce non-religious Jews, maybe not. As Mr. Weiser just said, maybe they weren't religious originally, they just did it because their parents said that. So, maybe it's because they had a problem with Emunah and a Kodesh Baruch. Problems could be. But allow us to be machmir for a moment on this study and say there's a shita that says that if your passion is here, that's where your kids will remain. Let us be machmir and show passion for Avodas Hashem too. And Avodas Hashem includes many things, but the basics are tefillah, Shabbos, and Kashrus, and Chagim, and the excitement towards it. If we're only going to show our excitement and get upset because the Prime Minister did this and the opposition said that, but when it comes to issues like Chilul Shabbos, alright, there's non-religious Jews in the world, this is what happened, alright, our deris is not to throw rocks at them and stones, and we don't do that. Oh, so what do we do? What do we do? We dive into our Kodesh Baruch when everything should be okay, and we'll close our eyes, and Mirta Hashem, everything's going to be good. Did I sound firm enough now? Right, that's what a firm Jew says, right? When it comes to politics, how dare they? We got to go, we got to smell. When it comes to, right, I'll just give you an example that happened a few weeks ago. We were speaking about the bus after Shabbos from Efrat to Yerushalayim. A lot of people come to Efrat for Shabbat, and they want to go home after Shabbos to Yerushalayim and then to wherever they live. So when does the bus come to Efrat? About an hour after Shabbos, right? So around the table, they were talking about how come it takes an hour for the bus to come? Why can't it come 10 minutes after Shabbos? So I said, maybe like an idiot, well, you know, in order for them to be there right after Shabbos, they'll have to drive on Shabbos. And then it's Chilul Shabbos, and probably the driver's Jewish. I don't think you want an Arab driver. So therefore, he's Mechalel Shabbos for you. So some people around the table looked at me like Nebuch, all right. A frum yid is coming into the room, a little frum kite, all right. But one person said to me, come on, that's just an issue for the Haredim. What do you mean that's just an issue for the Haredim? The Shulchan Aruch is an issue for the Haredim? So I said, what do you mean it's just for the Haredim? Maaseh Shabbat is a sugi and gemara. What happens if a Jew violates Shabbos on your behalf? And there's halachos that go with it. He said to me, yeah, but that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is for us to be good Jews. So we're good Jews. No, we're good Jews, and therefore, whatever they do, it's not our business. We'll go on the bus and we'll pretend that he did it for his own sake. He didn't do it for me. I go, but he is doing it for you. He's coming to Efrat to pick you up. It's not for someone else. No, but he's coming anyway. I go, no, he's not coming anyway. He's coming for you. You're a passenger. What do you mean, anyway? It's for you. It's ignorance? No, it's not ignorance. No, because he said to me, that's for the Haredim. So I said, according to what you're saying, so I took him afterwards, we continued the conversation, and in a very polite way I said to him, according to what you're saying, when you see a car on Shabbos, and it's driven by a Jew, forget about how you react to that. Do you throw rocks and stones? Do you make karek? Are you hurt by it? And the answer he gave me was, well, it's a free world. That answer is typical of what I'm saying. When the modern takes over the Orthodox, how dare we, if we ever one day will say on Shabbos, it doesn't hurt us. Doesn't hurt us, doesn't bother us. The free world, freedom of choice. Freedom of choice and free world is a Jewish concept too. But it shouldn't bother us. There isn't a pasuk in the Torah, achayach tochayach et amitecha. Whether you can do that today or not, does anyone know how to give tochayach today? Good question. But it shouldn't bother us, it shouldn't hurt our hearts that, oh my gosh, there's a Jew driving on Shabbos, Mechalel Shabbos. It should hurt us, and we should talk about how it hurt us.
You have to be on a certain level to feel that. If you wasn't on it, that's for sure.
He wasn't a kid. That was my problem. Kid? Yes? No. That wasn't a kid. It wasn't a kid. It's very interesting when that said that. Because I said to him, you're exactly a pasuk in Chumash in 2 weeks Parshas. And Parshas Nitzavim. This week is Kitavo. We're going to hear the terrible Tochecha. Parshas Nitzavim, right afterward, there's a pasuk that says, Shalom Yeli, Ki B'Shirut Li B'Yelech. What does that pasuk mean? I'll say in my heart, Shalom Yeli, I'll be have peace to me, Ki B'Shirut Li B'Yelech. Meaning what? I'm okay. I keep Shabbos. I'm okay. Yesterday was Shabbos. I did 3 meals. I had less commission at all meals. Was machmir for that shita. Had kiddush. Went to shul. Heard the Torah reading. Rested. Did everything you're supposed to do. I'm okay. That's a Jewish concept. I'm okay. Whatever happened to Arvus? Kol Yisrael Ravens Elazar. As a matter of fact, that concept of Arvus is not just a rabbi's speech, it's a halachic concept. Can anyone tell me where? Practically? No? It's not just a rabbi's speech, very nice. We're all guarantees to each other. Oh, beautiful. Let's say, Shibana Beis HaMikdash, Zavin Musaf. No? Where is it a halachic, practical concept for us?
The brothers?
The birth of a child?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Halachically in our life?
Ashmei Kona.
You're getting close?
Sure.
Yatzah Motzi. Friday night you made Kiddush, you ate your Motzi. An old lady next door comes and says, listen, I don't know how to read Hebrew, but I want to make Kiddush. Can I make Kiddush? Can you make Kiddush for me? No, can you make Kiddush again? Can you say God's name again? Maybe it's God's name in vain. You're ready, Yotzah. Right? Answer?
Yeah.
Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, absolutely. Yatzah Motzi. Why? If there's one Jew in the world that didn't make Kiddush, my mitzvah is tarnished. My mitzvah is not complete. I have to fulfill my mitzvah now. I got to make Kiddush for someone else. My point is that we have to show passion, not just for the politics and for the big world out there that we're open to, and I'm happy to be open to. We have to have our feet also in Torah, and that means, Ben Ashar, let's show passion for Torah. That means show passion when you make Kiddush. Show passion when ultimately a Yontif comes. Show passion that Tzlichos is coming. We're going to stand before Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're knocking on his door and saying, oh, we need your help. You have to show passion for it. And I'm not going to tell you to let it be fake. If it's fake, you should tell your kids, I don't feel it. I should feel it, but I don't. I can promise you your kids will respect you 10 times more for your honesty and your genuine statement than they will if you fake it. Because the kids know when you fake it. It's interesting. Adults don't know it. I can pull one over you very easily. But if the kids were sitting here now, I couldn't pull one over them. We have to show passion for both. Politics should bother us. What's happening today in Israel should bother us. They stormed the embassy in Egypt, which holds into question the whole peace agreement with Egypt, which puts into question any other peace agreement with the Arab world that right now is in a state of flux. Should bother us. We should talk about it. At the same token, huh?
And what should be the bother on that?
That there's Jews, and first of all, there's Jews that are in danger in Cairo. Number two, perhaps the peace agreement that we are proud of, which maybe gives us hope that we'll have other peace with other Arabs, is now being put into question. These things should bother us.
Is that shocking?
What?
Is that like shocking?
No, it's not shocking. Let's put it this way. But it's not shocking to me, based on the events of the last year, that this is happening. But it should bother us. It should bother us. We should daven for it, and then it should bother us, and we have to think about it. And we should talk about it at the Shabbos table. At the same time, at the same Shabbos table, we should say, you know, I went to shul today. I went to shul. I'm a good Jew. And I was in shul. And in shul, lo aleinu, there were people there that were talking. They were talking during Kriyat Shema. They were talking during Chazaras Hashat. How do people talk during shul? I mean, I sometimes do it myself. How do I talk during shul? What's wrong with us that we're talking during shul?
Even while they're talking, they don't know.
Oh!
Well,
is that worse than the guy who didn't show up?
Huh?
Is that worse than the guy who didn't show up?
That should bother you too?
Right, you don't keep banging and screaming at this guy for talking.
What I'm trying to say is, at our typical modern Orthodox table, do these issues come up at the Shabbos table or at the dinner table, or only the modern part of our life, not the Orthodox part of our life, come up? If only one is coming up, I believe we're in trouble. We have a sakana over our heads. We're going to have to live in both worlds. On the one hand, the Torah is eternal. On the other hand, we apply it to the world, then we better be equal, at least equal, in both worlds. If you ask me, maybe not equal. The passion should be more for the Torah than it is for the modern. But ultimately, both have to come up at the Shabbos table. And that's what I'm basically trying to say today. If you're going to be excited and you're going to have lively conversations at the Shabbos table, if you're going to have lively conversations in the living room, you're going to talk to your kids about what bothers you, then it can't just be about the news. It has to also be about the simple things in life, the basics. And the basics are, in the Tilas Yadayim in the morning, learning Torah and whatnot. When was the last time you went to a shir? There are five people there maybe. And you came home and you said, how come only five people come to this shir? Community is 150 families. Only five people can come to the shir of the rabbi? Hey! What's the matter over here? This kol is not a good example because you have to work America. You have Milam Mitzchut here. But ultimately, gentlemen, if we're not going to be bothered by these issues and convey it to the next generation, then why would they be passionate about anything that has to do with these basics? We have to show this bothers us, just like that bothers us. When you see a car on Shabbos, you have to say, "Oy, it's terrible, they don't know the Kedusha of Shabbos. They don't know the severity of violating Shabbos and the driving on Shabbos. Kids, this is not good. We have to be bothered by it." What are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do is a very good question. The Haredim throw rocks and scream and yell and make religious laws. I don't know if that's the derech we want to do. We have to mekarev them. We have to find ways to mekarev them. We have to talk to them. Whatever it is, you have to go ahead and make it come up at the table. Make it an issue. And that's my bottom line. Then I'll hear your question. Let's make Torah an issue, not just the politics and everything else. We're modern Orthodox. Let the modern be an issue, but let the Orthodox be an issue. Get an issue. That's my message today. Yeah.
Point the finger back at you.
Back at me.
Back as a rabbi of the community, and all the other rabbis here, how come they don't have a problem about school Shabbos in the truck and Shabbos with cars driving through?
So there are.
I'm hoping they do have a problem. I'm hoping they do have a problem, and I hope they address it, and I hope they find ways. I can't. I'd rather you not name names because I can't talk for anyone but myself. I can't talk for anyone but myself. I can't talk for anyone but myself. But I'm telling you now as follows: as to what to do about Chilul Shabbos, that's a whole different conversation. Okay? I'm not so sure that closing your frat is going to stop Chilul Shabbos.
What particular item? You can't go and tell them out and tell them they don't watch television if that's what they believe.
No. The closing the streets and the frat, I'm not sure, is going to be the recipe for stopping Chilul Shabbos. Some believe it is, and that's why in Haredi communities they close the streets.
Sure,
I'm not so sure because of the reason you're saying, but rather it's more out of the interest of comfort. In other words, I can leave shul, there's no cars.
People wouldn't see cars. Wouldn't see cars.
Again, I personally would not be comfortable with the solution you're saying. For two reasons. You want to hear my opinion? I'll tell you in a minute, but let's finish this. I'll tell you my opinion in a minute why I'm not comfortable with that solution. What I would like to see happening is a real debate or a real discussion.
That
this bothers us. This is an issue. What do we do?
Many people are non-religious.
You have Alex coming ahead and saying his suggestion. I'd like to hear other suggestions. I want it to be an issue. And I don't see it being an issue. And that's what bothers me.
You're not going to stop the person.
I'll tell you in a minute. But let's just finish. Any other questions on this?
Yeah.
On this. And then we'll go into what Alex said.
My question on that is, I imagine that the three of you younger people, I mean, you know, I was asking in a second.
Those who drive, they think they're because they're thronging.
They think it's not so bad.
No, they think. Because I have to experience it. The boy is... I'm not alone.
Correct.
I would ask you about your...
That is correct.
In terms of passionate homes, so there's three people here who grew up in religious homes. I grew up in such a non-religious home that I never saw any mitzvahs hardly in the house. And I became, you know, an Orthodox Jew. So do you feel that you... that a frat in your home is similar to the way you grew up, and for you, Mr. Weiser, since you grew up, I know, in a different world completely,
well, that world is better, with a more passionate way of the you know? See different.
So with the people...
I was, of course, a good player, but no, I don't have to tell you, you know, that most extreme.
So did kids give it up? Was there a teenage problem, like we have in front? Did some younger people decide
not to? I was a teenager.
Them?
I didn't know. I was also a teenager.
So did you have friends there?
Bruce, the answer is historically yes. Between the two world wars, there was a lot of problems.
Well, did you go with
I lived in, you know where I lived in South.
So were there people there?
I'm a talented.
were there kids your age?
Do I have to tell you more?
Were there kids your age who decided not to
kill? I don't know that.
Well, and then, after I became a Zionist, people asked me, how come? I said, I'm quite a bit sure.
I'm saying in his world, where there, let's say there was no passion.
There was.
Did they see a similar problem?
Again. We're going into many of the ramifications of what I said, and one of them is what you're suggesting, namely, if there's passion, then is that a recipe, or the recipe, to ultimately instilling Yirat Shamayim? My answer is going to be, no. Now you're going to say, well, you just gave a whole class, the study. I said, the study showed that there was no passion, and therefore the kids remained with the passion of the parents, namely being righted. Now, Yirat Shamayim, instilling Yirat Shamayim, it's not Zdeng V'Gamarnu, as we say in Hebrew. It's not a simple potion. You go to the doctor, I want to have a healthy heart, all right, 30 kilometers, do 30 minutes a day, take these pills. And that's not the way Yirat Shamayim works. Yirat Shamayim requires what? We said it last year, but I'll say it again. What's the dirty word in Judaism? Fast. No, a dirty word is not commitment, Chas V'Shalom. Fast internet. Commercials. Right? Immediate. Fast. Living in the fast world. There used to be fast food, then there's microwave, and now there's fast internet, and everything's fast. We don't have time. So when we don't have time, means we don't have patience. We don't have patience. So therefore, Yirat Shamayim should be like this, a recipe. So let's go to a rabbi. Rabbi, how do I educate my kids? Quick, give me the five things. He thinks he's going to a doctor, and he's going to say, 30 minutes a day, run, and then take these pills, and eat this. That's not the way Yirat Shamayim works. Yirat Shamayim is like any marriage. You're now in a relationship with God. You have to work on the relationship. It's not just, okay, you fell in love, great, you have bar mitzvah. Okay, now finished, you don't have to go on a date again. Everything's going to be okay. Husbands and wives never quarrel, never have debates, never fight. Yirat Shamayim is no different. There's going to be struggle, and it's not going to be easy. And the word fast is the worst word you can use in Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim needs time and needs effort. And if you think it's going to be like this, it's not. And just like Bruce is sitting here and said originally he wasn't religious, he became religious, it happened overnight. One day you woke up, that's it?
There was a sudden awakening after an Elena Rodkin seminar that there was more to Torah than I knew.
One second,
child.
Go back. You went to what seminar?
One of these Elena Discovery.
Elena Discovery seminar. Why did you go to the Elena Discovery seminar on a Shabbos?
No, they gave me a free ticket from St. Louis.
Free ticket to St. Louis, too?
From New York.
To New York.
A star pupil in the learning.
Very nice.
So they sent me off to the.
Very nice. Why would you decide to go there and not to a basketball game?
Because they sent me, and I said, you know what, okay, because I was with Christians in chiropractic school,
yeah.
I wanted to know why I wasn't a Christian.
Very nice. You had an awakening.
But I was dealing with
it takes
people.
Time.
Issue.
Bruce, you just proved my point. It takes time, and it takes effort, and it doesn't happen overnight, and you have to grow into it. And you have to, and growing
was,
up with
there
it.
There was a moment I had to say, I'm going to take this seriously.
Okay. I'm not saying not.
The process of
God, I'm not saying not. I'm very happy.
When the kid decides to take his people, maybe in a second he makes that decision. How he does it, I think,
it's a whole process before.
I don't believe
it was just overnight.
The study is better if I examine people after they're married, where they send their kids. Because you're a teenager, you may be trying to give people
up today. There are studies.
10 years later,
there are studies.
Back in the fold.
Okay.
So maybe he's simply rebelling at his parents.
Could very well be, but I'm trying to say whether you accept the study, or as Bruce and Alex said, you don't accept the study. It's because they have a problem with emunah, whatever it might be. I think everyone around this table can agree that we have to have passion for the modern and for the Orthodox.
Yeah.
And if we don't show passion for the modern and for the Orthodox, then I believe we're setting a stage for something dangerous. It may not be taking off the kippah, by the way. It may not be that. Let me just give you another example that happens in our communities that are Shomer Shabbos. Shomer Shabbos. But have you seen a difference in behavior and dress between the parents and the kids? The answer is yes, because styles change. Yes. So styles change. I'm the first to sign on. Even sneeze is a subjective term many times, not for everything, but for many things. Yet. But they could be Shomer Shabbos, and yet there isn't the passion of their parents. In the sense of, have you seen a father going to Minyan every day and going to Daf Yomi, and the son following in the footsteps of the father, working for a living in some job, does not go to Daf Yomi, does not ultimately go ahead and daven in a minyan. It happens. Yeah. Now you may say, okay, he's different, and everyone is different. But does he daven in a different minyan? Does he daven? Does he put on tefillin every day? I don't know. And then you ask yourself, well, what happened here? How come this tradition changed to the next generation? There it seems like they're more devout, quote-unquote, than them. And the answer, I believe, would be Ben Hashar, and again, not the only answer. Where's the passion? Passionate about something? He goes adasos, I'm convinced. When you're passionate, you go adasos. If you're passionate today to buy something on eBay, you will buy it on eBay. You'll sit there in front of the computer till you find the price you want, you'll bid on it, and you'll get it. And if you don't get it, you'll bid on the next item.
Which doesn't mean your kid would, because he sees you doing it. There's no connection.
There is definitely a connection. It's not the only connection. My point is, it's not the only connection, and it's not the only magic to ensure Yirat Shamayim. And as I said earlier, Yirat Shamayim is a lifetime quest. However, let's make sure that we have some of the ingredients that are needed, and one of them is passion, excitement. Make it an issue. Make Judaism an issue at the Friday night table. Not just the other issues. That's what I'm trying to say today. Is this the only thing that you need? Of course not. Am I naive to think that if you're passionate, every one of your kids are going to be like you? Of course not. Of course not. As I said earlier, I'm not many things. But one thing I'm not.
Right, I think that the big difference here.
The passion has to be at our table. That's what I'm trying to say.
Assuming passion is one place. To give everyone the benefit of the
doubt. Pardon?
One of the places in your passion.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, it's a whole, it's a complete thing. Day, night, young Delilah.
What did we say, Alex? This whole year is going to be thoughts on my community. Today we didn't finish. We're going
to
continue.
To give benefit of the doubt, I've had, I don't know, scores of people at my table. I've been for the, and everyone talks over the table. I have never heard a table gone only on a political talk, and rarely a political talk. From my experience, maybe you're designed to do it a little bit.
Chris, I want to, maybe you didn't understand me. I don't know if you understood me. No, your comment makes me think that you didn't understand
me. I've never been at the table, ever.
Okay.
At the talk.
So allow me to illustrate what I feel is happening at our table, and you'll tell me if you've seen something different. I was talking about passion and excitement. You were just commenting that you have never been at a table where there wasn't Torah. Some Torah at the table. I have to agree. Allow me to give you this.
They're not passionate at anything. They're low key.
Allow me to give you this. Make a moti. You did the formalities. You're sitting at the table, right? When does someone say you got a Dvar Torah? Question number one. When? Leave that question aside. Number two.
We do it right away when the women are getting stuff together. We sit.
You ready? You got a Dvar Torah? Well, what is that basically saying? When you say, you guys Bar Torah? Two things. Number one, it's not natural. We have to say it's Bar Torah, so let's stop the natural flow of the table, and we'll, you guys Bar Torah? You guys Bar Torah? I never felt that way. I always felt that Bar Torah is detached. It's like something you have to do. And when the Bar Torah is said, and the guy gets up, it's not that people are listening and adhering to his words or her words because they want to, they chose to, or whatnot. Sometimes I feel it's like, okay, this is something we have to do. We can't sit at a table without a Dvar Torah, Shlosha Shachlu, and Ben Benahem, Divrei Torah, you know what Chazal say. All right, you got a Dvar Torah. We got a bench already, but you got a Dvar Torah? Or, let me give you another motto, not that, you sit at the table, and as you talk in passion about politics, naturally, you say, you know, there's Jews that are driving today. How can it be the Jews are driving? It says in the Pasuk. You got it, Martona. Don't give that preface. Don't give the introduction where already people think it's the text. No, as you're talking, naturally, part of the talk is, you know, Chazal say exactly what you're saying. Or, you know, I was thinking about that this morning in shul when I saw people talking. My question is, which of the two models have you seen more frequently in our communities?
I've seen pretty high passionate, you know, again, maybe it's different here in this neighborhood. It may be. It's a different community. I want to comment on the issue that I think the big difference that I see is that here in the flat, and maybe with other modern law communities, if I use that term, it's okay to do something different. It's just okay. As opposed to Beethoven, it's not okay. It's just not okay.
We're going to get to that on Wednesday. I'd rather not talk about that
today. If the kid is, and if you have a kid, you know, it's kind of okay. Why? Because God forbid we should, like, beat the kid, throw the kid out of the house, threaten the kid, be too strict. I mean, so it's okay. You know, he'll come around, no pressure. It's okay.
We're talking about two different things.
But that's why there's a difference.
No. I think what you're saying.
Well, Mr. Wadsworth Grubber was not okay.
We are talking about two different things. The first thing is, are we bothered by it? Do we show passion?
Most people are bothered.
And do we show anguish?
Yes.
And by the way, I'm not just talking about in your own home. I'm talking about whatever. Yeah. I disagree. I totally disagree. I don't think people are bothered by it.
Bothered
and what you're saying, namely, it's okay.
No,
so he's not religious. It's fine.
Really,
and he drives. It's good. Okay.
Really good.
Second question is, it's like this. Second question is, well, is us being tolerant resulting in us not being bothered by it? Maybe the tolerance is a means to deal with something that bothers you. It's not saying I don't care. It's saying I care so much that one of the ways to deal with it is not to say something.
No, being tolerant.
Allow me to give you an example of what I mean that happened in my own yeshiva. There was a student in the yeshiva that did something awful. And he was waiting for the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Amital Zichrono Livracha, to scream at him. Friday night, he goes to say good Shabbos to the Rosh Yeshiva. Rosh Yeshiva says nothing. Okay? This student eventually left the yeshiva and thanked the Rosh Yeshiva for being quiet and ultimately not beating him over the head for doing something that he was absolutely deserved. Because that taught him. First of all, it taught him a Maimer Chazal that happens to be true. He said, I never believed it. Siyag Rachochma Shtika. Chazal says, what's the most smartest thing to do sometimes? Siyag Rachochma Shtika, to shut up. And number two, he loved the fact that he was able to lahavlig and not say what he wanted. My point being that sometimes tolerance is because you are bothered by it and you believe this is the way to deal with it.
Right.
Sometimes you are bothered by it, and the way to deal with it is not by tolerance. It's by screaming and yelling. But what I'm saying is, I'm not going to judge the tolerance as the reason for us not being bothered by it. Sometimes the tolerance is exactly what the doctor ordered, and sometimes it's not.
Because we live in a tolerant community, it's okay that our kids are not like us. And things will sink to the lowest common denominator. If you have a married couple, one yells, one doesn't, they're both going to yell. You have kids who fight, one fights, they're both going to fight. The natural human condition is to sink to the lowest common. It's very hard to raise yourself up. So when you have a community of people where kids hang out and whatever they do, it's very, very easy for all the kids now, a new kid moving into a flat who's coming from, somewhere in Baltimore, he moves here. Within a matter of weeks, he's going to have shorts on, a t-shirt, unless his parents fight very, very hard to keep him dressed a certain way, he will sink to this, if I can use the term sink, to the lowest common denominator, he'll do whatever it'll take.
I don't know, shorts and t-shirts.
Because no one's going to ostracize the kid. No one's going to say,
Now you're already getting into my Wednesday talk that I'd like to speak about this coming Wednesday, and that is the tolerance versus tolerance. There's two kinds of tolerance.
I'm gonna
suggest there's two kinds of tolerance. What I believe you're saying, and if the way I understand it is correct, and it's something we have to deal with, God willing, on Wednesday.